last time, yesterday, we noted that there was a certain person that went on a visitation program and made a visit to the Jews. Who was that person, remember?
Tatnai,
and he was the governor of the territory west of the Euphrates River. And remember, he went to see the Jews, and when he went to see the Jews, he noticed that the temple was being built, the walls were being built. He didn't know of any authorization that had been given to the Jews to do this, so he asked a very natural question. He said, who commands you to do this? Who gave you the authorization to do this? Because remember, the Samaritans, when they got that letter from Pseudo-Smyrnus, the Persian king, had gone and forced them to stop building in compliance with the order that the Persian king gave. And remember, he said, you're not to build anymore until I give you another order. And so he didn't know of any other order, so Tatnai said, who commanded you to start building? And what are the names of your leaders? Well, that's a loaded question. Names of your leaders. And then after he asked them that question, he goes ahead and he writes a letter to Darius the First, who was then the king. And we noted yesterday that even though he had to write the letter and wait until it gets there and then wait for the reply, that he didn't stop the people of Israel from continuing their work on the temple or on the wall. That's an amazing thing. The logical thing, you know, stop right now. But there was that verse, as the eye of the Lord was upon them. And the Lord was showing favor to them, and that's why he didn't do it. Even the heart of Tatnai is in the hand of the Lord, and he turns that wherever he will. Well, Tatnai wrote this letter, and this is where we want to look today. What did Tatnai have to say in this letter to the king? Well, essentially, here is what he said. He said, I and my companions visited the province of Judah, where the temple is being built and where the walls are being built, and that work is progressing rapidly. Those Jews aren't wasting any time. That work is really moving forward. He says that my companions asked the Jews who gave them the authorization to do this, and also asked them the names of their leaders. And when we did that, then the Jews gave us a little history lesson. They said, now, we are servants of God, and one of our kings built a house to the Lord. The name of that king was who? Remember? Solomon. Now, his name is not given in the letter, but Solomon was the one who built the house of the Lord. That house stood for a number of years. Then the people of Israel rebelled against the Lord and provoked him to anger. And because the Lord was provoked to anger, he sent Nebuchadnezzar. And that house of the Lord, that temple, was destroyed. And the people of Israel were taken into captivity because the people of Israel had provoked the Lord. And then Cyrus issued a decree. Now here's the answer to the question. Who commanded you to rebuild the temple? Well, Cyrus issued a decree saying that we should do it. And he issued this decree stating that we should do it. And not only did he state that we should do it, but he also points out that he said that the gold and silver vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple unto his temple in Babylon should be given to Sheshbazzar. Now, Sheshbazzar is another name for whom? Zerubbabel. Should be given to Sheshbazzar or Zerubbabel and taken back to the temple and put in their places where they originally were in the temple. And so he said that Sheshbazzar or Zerubbabel has come back. He's laid foundation. He brought those vessels with him. He's laying the foundation, and the work is still going on. It's not finished yet. But then he requested King Darius to do something. He said, now, here's what I would request you to do. I would request you to search the archives of the king's treasury house. They are in Babylon. To determine whether or not Cyrus actually gave this decree that the Jews said that he gave. And so he makes that request, and then he says, when you have done this, or whatever you decide, let me know so I can follow through with what you say. Just inform me of your decision in this matter. And what he wanted to do was search those archives. And so if Cyrus did make the decree, that he could decide whether he wanted the work to continue or if he wanted the work to be stopped. So he said, you just let me know your decision in this matter. Now, if you look at chapter 5, you will see these things spelled out very clearly for us. Look at chapter 5. The letter starts, and this is a copy of a letter with verse 6. Verse 7 says, they sent a letter unto him, that is unto Darius, wherein was written, unto Darius the king. Now this is Darius the first. Remember, he was the king from 521 to 486 B.C. Unto Darius the first, all peace. That's like Greek, that you would give. Be it known unto the king that we went into the province of Judea to the house of the great God, which is builded with great stones and timber is laid in the walls. This work goeth fast on and prospereth in their hands. In other words, this work of building the temple is really moving and goeth fast on. You know, it's rapidly progressing. They are really making that temple go up. Then asked we those elders and said unto them thus, who commanded you to build this house and to make these walls? Who told you to start to work on this temple and to build these walls again? We asked their names also to certify thee that we might write the names of the men that were the chief of them. Now you see there it spells out that the names they wanted were their leaders, the chief among them. And they asked them for these names so that they could give these names to Darius in case he wanted to do anything. He would know exactly to whom to go, who to look for if he wanted to get rid of these people for any reason. So that would really jeopardize their lives. And thus they returned us an answer. Now here's what the Jews said in answer to this question. Who commanded you to build the walls to resume this work on the temple? And they said, we are the servants of God of heaven and earth, and build the house that was built these many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and set up. In other words, this is the temple that Solomon once built. It was built many years ago. We're building it again. It's that same temple. But after our fathers had provoked the God of heaven under wrath, they did that by their sin. Remember, they committed idolatry. And that provoked the Lord. He gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this house and carried the people into Babylon. It was because the people provoked the Lord. They moved into anger. When you don't obey the Lord gets angry. And he manifests his anger. And he manifested his anger by using Nebuchadnezzar as a tool, as an instrument in his hand. And he used Nebuchadnezzar, this wicked king. Nebuchadnezzar wasn't aware of that, I'm sure. But the Lord was using him to chasten his people. And he used him to destroy the house of the Lord that Solomon had built, which he did in either 588 or 586 B.C. and carried the people into Babylon. But in the first year of Cyrus, king of Babylon, the same king Cyrus made a decree to build this house of God. Now you want to know who authorized it to do it? King Cyrus did. In the first year of his reign, he authorized us to build this house of God to replace the one that Solomon had built. And the vessels also of gold and silver of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, and brought them is the temple of Babylon. Those did Cyrus the king take out of the temple of Babylon, and they were delivered unto one whose name was Sheshbazzar. That's another name for Zerubbabel, whom he, Cyrus, had made governor. See, he'd already appointed him governor of the province of Judah. And so he put these vessels in his hand and said unto him, take these vessels, go carry them into the temple that is in Jerusalem, and let the house of God be built in his place. That is on the very site where the other temple was. This is where it is to be built. Then came the same Sheshbazzar and laid the foundation of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. And since that time, even until now, has it been in building, yet it's still not finished. Since that time, he's been working on it, but it's still not done. Now, therefore, now this is what Tatnai, now see, all of this is what the Jews told Tatnai and his companions. And Tatnai and his companions are just relating this to Darius the First. Now, Tatnai says, now therefore, if it seem good to the king, let there be search made in the king's treasure house, which is there in Babylon. That's where the archives are, in the treasure house. Whether it be so that a decree was made of Cyrus the king to build this house of God in Jerusalem, let the king send his pleasure to us concerning this matter. That is, you find out whether or not this decree was granted, and if it was granted, you let us know what you want to do about it, whether to let the work continue or to stop the work, bring a halt to the work. Now, here's the letter. It's amazing that whole letter the Lord preserved that was written by Tatnai, the governor of Syria and Cilicia, to Darius the First, king of Persia. Now, notice what happens when Darius the First gets this letter. He issues a decree. The letter is sent to him. Tatnai allows the work to continue on the temple. Remember, it's really progressing. It goeth forth fast, rapidly progressing. But the work goes on, and Darius the First gets this letter. Now, as soon as he gets this letter, he issues a decree that a search be made of the archives in his treasure house in Babylon for the decree of Cyrus to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. He gets this letter and he says, what Tatnai has requested is a good idea. We need to find out whether or not that decree was really issued as the Jews said. And so he issues an order for it. And you can see this in chapter 6 and verse 1. Then Darius the king, he's received the letter, made a decree. See, he's going to do what Tatnai requested him to do. He said, if it seems good to the king, let there be search made in the king's treasure house, whether it be so that the decree was made of Cyrus the king. So he said, that does seem good to me. That seems like a good idea. So the king made a decree. Search was made in the house of the rolls, or the scrolls that were there, where the treasures were laid up in Babylon. Now, he issues this decree that people will go and search through the archives there in the king's treasure house in Babylon, where the archives were kept, for this decree of Cyrus, king of Persia, to rebuild the temple of Jerusalem. Now, notice the discovery of the decree of Cyrus and its terms. Now, I want you to look at verse 2. Now, remember that the search was made in the king's treasure house in Babylon for the archive. Now, look at verse 2. And there was found that Agnetha in the palace, the king's palace, that is in the province of the Medes, a roll, and therein was a record thus written. Now, the record that was thus written is going to be the decree that Cyrus gave. But notice where they found it. They found it at Agnetha in the king's palace, that is in the province of the Medes. Agnetha is the transliteration of the Aramaic name of this particular place in Media.
into English.
Just take the Aramaic name, the Aramaic letters, and transliterate them into English. So instead of using Aramaic letters, you would use the English equivalent. Now, this place was the same as Ecbatana, which was the capital of Media. And that's where they found the decree. What do you suppose happened? How come they found the decree there instead of in the treasure house in Babylon? Any ideas? See, they searched the archive for the decree in the treasure house that was in Babylon, but did they find it there? Well, the records were moved. You're pretty close. Certain records were moved. Not all of them, because they were still archived there. But certain records were moved. They were transferred from the treasure house of the king in Babylon to the king's palace in Ecbatana, the capital of Media. Now, why do you suppose that was done? Why do you suppose certain records were transferred? Any idea? It was, in all probability, let me add that. Now, here's the suggestion that was made. The suggestion is made that Pseudo-Smyrnus did this. Now, not all the records were removed, but he took the edict of his predecessors and he removed them from the king's treasure house that was in Babylon to the king's palace in Ecbatana, the capital of Media, because he eventually wanted to destroy them. But the interesting thing was that there had to be a record there in the king's treasure house in Babylon, and these records had been transferred there. Otherwise, the searchers wouldn't have known where to go. And so, in the providence of the Lord, there was a record there that these decrees had been transferred from there to Akhnetha, or Ecbatana, the king's palace there, so that when these searchers were going through the archives in obedience to the decree of Darius I, they found this record indicating that these edicts of the predecessors of Darius had been transferred from there to the king's palace in Ecbatana. And so they went there, and lo and behold, they found it. Now, notice the reason for the transfer is a probable reason, not a dogmatic reason. But this is what Kyle and Daly suggested, and it seems to me that it could make a lot of sense, but whether or not that was the reason, we don't know. But whether or not it was the reason or not, the fact is that they were transferred. And that's the reason why they searched one place, the records are found in another place. They had been transferred there, and there was a record made of the transferal of these records so that the searchers knew where to go. And they went there, and they searched through the records there at Ecbatana, which was the capital of Persia. And when they did that, then they discovered this scroll. And lo and behold, there was the decree that Cyrus had made concerning the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. Now, the terms of that decree are stated very clearly. And I want you to notice the terms of this decree with me. First, the temple was to be rebuilt so that the sacrifices could be offered to the Lord. Now look at chapter 6 and verse 3. Now this is what is written. Verse 2 says, there was found at Akhmetha, the palace, the king's palace that is in the province of Be, a roll or a scroll, and there in was a record thus written. Now here's what was written on the scroll that they found. In the first year of Cyrus the king, the same Cyrus the king made a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem. Let the house be built, the place where they offered sacrifices. In other words, the house of God where the Jews offer sacrifices is to be rebuilt. And the implication is so that sacrifices can be offered there again. again, that's why he says where they offer sacrifice. He wants that place rebuilt so that sacrifice can be once more offered unto the Lord. Notice the next term of the decree. The foundation of the temple was to be strong so that the temple would last a long time. Look at the next part of that verse. It says, and let the foundation thereof be strongly laid. When this temple is built, I just don't want anything thrown up. I want those foundations to be strong so that that temple will last for a long time. The foundations are to be strongly laid. And then notice the next part of the decree. The temple was to be built according to the dimensions and style of construction specified. Now, you'll notice that the dimensions are specified. The height thereof, 60 cubits, 60 cubits, or 90 feet. And the breadth thereof, 60 cubits, or 60 cubits, or 90 feet. So 90 feet high, 90 feet wide. They would be the dimensions of the temple. And then notice the style of construction in verse 4, with three rows of great stones and a row of new timber. Now this may refer to the way the walls in the inner court of the temple are to be built, because we have that same specification in 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 36, where it talks about the inner walls of the temple. They were to be constructed with three rows of hewn stone and then a row of cedar wood. That's how those walls were to be constructed. And so that may, now underscore may, that may be what is in view here, speaking of how the walls of the temple were to be constructed. But the style of construction is to be followed. Here are the dimensions, 90 feet high, 90 feet wide. Here's the style of construction, and that is to be followed. And then notice the next thing. The expenses for the rebuilding of the temple were to be paid out of the king's treasury. Now Cyrus put this in writing. See, we can put something in writing. It's going to stand. And the Lord had to do this. Remember, we mentioned when we first indicated this decree that Cyrus made, how he proclaimed that decree through the land. He put it in writing. Here's the proof that it was in writing. You have it here, verse 4. Notice the last part of it. And let the expenses be given out of the king's house. All the expenses that are involved in rebuilding this temple are to come out of the king's treasury. So the king, Cyrus, is going to pay for it. So you Jews go, you build your temple, and the king says, I'll pay for it. Just that simple. The Lord just had his hand on it. See, Cyrus is called, way back in Isaiah, the anointed of the Lord. The Lord predicted that he would come by name, and the Lord was going to use him. And here, the Lord is using him. And notice the next part of this decree. The gold and silver vessels which Nebuchadnezzar had brought from the temple in Jerusalem to Babylon were to be taken back to Jerusalem and put in the temple. Look at verse 5. And also let the golden and silver vessels of the house of God which Nebuchadnezzar took forth out of the temple which is at Jerusalem and brought them to Babylon, and he put them in the temple of his God, be restored and brought again unto the temple which is at Jerusalem, everyone to its place. Place them in the house of God. You put all these vessels right back in the house of God where they were before, where they were in the temple before. You just take them and you put them right back there in the temple. Now here is this decree that Cyrus had written out. And here it is on the scroll. And here are these searchers who are going through the records there in Ecbatana. They come across this scroll, and here is the decree of Cyrus with the terms of the decree very clearly spelled out. Temple to be rebuilt offer to the Lord. The foundation of the temple was to be so strongly laid that it would last for a long time. The temple is to be built according to these specific dimensions, 90 feet high, 90 feet wide, and according to this style of construction where the walls, maybe, you have three rows of hewn stone and then a row of cedar wood. All the expenses for this to be paid for by the king, and all those vessels, remember there were 5,400 of them, that Nebuchadnezzar brought from the house of God to Babylon, to his temple, are to be given back to Jews, taken back to Jerusalem. When that temple was finished, they are to be put back in that temple exactly where they were. That's quite a decree, isn't it? And there is a decree that was issued by Cyrus, and which was discovered by the searchers whom Darius the First had directed to search the archives in the king's treasury at Babylon, which led them to the king's palace in Ecbatana, where they found this decree. Now, what happens when Darius the First has this scroll brought to him? So he sees this decree. How did he react? Remember how he reacts? What did he do when he got that information? Anybody remember? What did he do? Larry?
Wrote a letter. Said a letter.
That's right. He wrote a letter back. And that is the next thing on the list. The letter from Darius the First, king of Persia, to Tatnai, the governor, and his companions. I see Tatnai had written this letter to Darius. Now he said, what I would request you do is search these archives and see whether or not Cyrus really made this decree that the Jews say that he made. Cyrus says, that seems like a good idea to me. He searches the archives, he finds the decree. Now he's going to write a letter back to Tatnai. And in this letter, here is essentially what he says. He says, now, what I want you to do is to let the Jews finish the work that they are doing on the temple. I want you to leave them alone. I don't want you to interfere with them in any way. You let them go ahead and finish that work. Now, not only do I want you to do that, but then he remembers that in that decree, it said that the temple was to be paid for how? How was that temple to be paid for? Out of the king's treasury. So he says, now, here's what I want you to do. I want you, Tatnai, to take the revenue that comes in for me from the people in your province. See? Now, here's Tatnai. Remember, he's governor of the territory west of the Euphrates River. Now, taxes would come in from the people in that area. And the taxes would come in, and Tatnai would give the taxes to the king, to Darius. He says, now, the revenue that comes in for me from the people in your province, what I want you to do is take out all the money from that revenue that is necessary to build that temple. And then if there's any left, you send me the balance. But you take all the money out of that. See, Darius is going to follow through with what Cyrus has said. He said it should be paid for out of the king's treasury. He says, that's exactly what we're going to do. I have revenue coming to me from people in your province. Now, when you collect that revenue, Tatnai, you take out of that revenue all the money that's needed to rebuild this temple. And if there's any left over, then you send the rest to me. But here's something else I want you to do. I want you to go and I want you to check with the priests there in Jerusalem. And I want you to find out how many animals they need for sacrifice each day. I want you to find out how many oxen that they need, how many rams, how many sheep. And what I want you to do, Tatnai, is to make sure that they have enough animals. The priest will know how many that they need. They know all their feasts and everything. I want you to make sure they have enough animals for sacrifice every day, and I don't want you to miss a single day. I don't want any intermission in this. I don't want you to do it a few days and then say, oh, I forgot, and we didn't. say that. I want you to furnish for them all of the wine, the oil, the wheat, and the salt that they need for their meal offering. Now, the priest will know just what they need. Now, I want you to find out. You do your homework now. You find out just what is needed. And I want you to supply all of that material that they need for their offerings, the animals they need for their sacrifices, all the food stocks that they need for their other offerings, and you make sure they have that every day. I am footing the bill for this. And I want you to make sure that they have all those sacrifices and everything else they need. Now, why did he want that? Well, it was a very good reason. He wanted that because he wanted the sacrifices that would be offered to the Lord to be well pleased unto him. And so he said, I want them to be able to offer sacrifices unto the Lord that will be acceptable, that will be well pleasing unto him. So you make sure that they have everything they need to do it. Now, why was he so concerned that the Jews have everything they need to offer these sacrifices unto the Lord that would be well pleasing, that would be acceptable unto him? What was he after? Can somebody tell me? That's right. You see, there was kind of a selfish motive there, but that's a pretty good motive. He wanted the priests to pray that God's blessing would be upon him and his dynasty. So that's what he wanted. And so he said, listen, this God of the Jews, our God, and I don't want him angry with me. And so what I want to do is to furnish these Jews everything they need for these sacrifices. So when they offer them up, they'll be well pleasing to him. And then they can pray that the Lord's blessing will be upon me and my dynasty. See, I don't want the wrath of that God being poured out against me. I want to have his favor. And that's what he was after. He was seeking the favor of the God of the Jews. Now, he spells all this out. Now, let's just look at a little bit of this. And let me finish this first. He gave these instructions to Tatnai. Now, what was to happen if anybody disobeyed what he said? What was to happen if somebody said, I don't want to do that? What was the punishment he set forth? Anybody remember? That's right. He said, anybody disobeys my law, I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to his house. I want you to take one of the pieces of timber out of his house, one of the beams. And I want you to take that fella and I want you to crucify him on that fella. And then what's going to happen to the rest of his house? Destroy it. And he says, anybody disobeys me, doesn't do what I say in regard to this matter, he said, that's what's going to happen. You think that they are going to follow through? Well, surely they're going to follow through. And then he went on, and he said not only that, but he concluded his letter by saying that if anybody would dare to do anything that would be harmful to the temple, what did he ask that God would do to that person? God would destroy it. So if any king does anything that is opposed to the temple, if any person does anything that is opposed to the temple, he expresses his wish that God would destroy anyone who would do anything that was harmful to the temple. Now let's just look at a few of these references here. Now that will give you the idea, but let's start with this letter that we have, and we see it starting in verse 6. Now, therefore, Tatnai, the governor, beyond the river, and then it gives a few more words there, and here's what he says. Let the work of this house of God alone. In verse 6, he says, be ye far from thence. And Tatnai, you and the others who are with you, stay away from the Jews. Don't bother them. Don't interfere with them. Let the work of this house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews build this house in its place. In other words, on the very site where the previous temple was, that is where it is to be built. Moreover, I make a decree. Here it is. What ye shall do to the elders of these Jews for the building of this house of God, that of the king's goods, even of the tribute beyond the river, now that's the tribute paid on the western side of the Euphrates River, forthwith expenses be given unto these men, that they be not hindered. In other words, that's just what I mentioned to you. You take the revenue that you receive, the people in your province, that's for me. You take the money out of that that is needed to rebuild the temple. You see, it just states it so plainly. And that which they have need of, both of young bullocks, young oxen, and rams and lambs, for the burnt offerings of the God of heaven, wheat, salt, wine, oil, according to the appointment of the priests, which are at Jerusalem. The priests know how many sacrifices are needed, how much food and the various things are needed for the sacrifices. Let it be given them day by day without fail. In other words, day by day without cessation. Every day you provide them the animals that they need, all the food they need for their sacrifices. You provide that for them. And then he goes on to say that they may offer sacrifices of sweet savors unto the God of heaven, and pray for the life of the king and of his sons. I want you to pray I want the priest to pray for my life and for the life of my descendants. I want God's blessing upon my life. I don't want his displeasure. I want his blessing upon my life and upon the life of my descendants. Also, I have made a decree that whatsoever or whosoever shall alter this word, let timber be pulled down from his house. There it is. Take a piece of timber out of his house. Let it be pulled down from his house, and being set up, let it be hanged on it, and let his house be made a dunghill for this. You destroy the rest of his house. You take a piece of timber. If anybody disobeys what I say, you crucify that person on it, then you destroy his house. And the God that hath caused his name to dwell there, destroy all kings and people that shall put to their hand to alter and destroy the house of God which is at Jerusalem. He's expressing his wish that God will destroy all kings. If any king tries to do this, any person tries to do this, that God will destroy that person. Then he says, I, Darius, have made a decree. Let it be done with speed. That is, I don't want you to delay now in carrying this out. I want this to be carried out immediately. And so, here is this letter that Darius the First sends back to Tatnai. And he says, you just let those Jews go ahead and finish that work. You pay for it. Give them the material they need for all their sacrifices so that they can pray to God, and God's blessing will be upon me and my life, and specifies punishment for anybody who disobeys. Now you come down to the execution of the decree of Darius the First, sent by letter to Tatnai and his companions. Now when Tatnai and his companions got this letter, they immediately carried out what Tatnai said. You notice that Tatnai said, do it with speed. The latter part of verse 13, verse 12 rather, he says, let it be done with speed. Then look at verse 13. Then Tatnai, the governor on this side of the river, Shethar Boznai and their companions, according to that which Darius the king had said, so they did speedily. They carried out exactly what Tatnai carried out exactly what Darius the first had asked to do. And that means that they let them build the temple, didn't stop them. Not only that, but they supplied the funds to do it, supplied the sacrifices, and made sure that the work went on as Darius the first intended it to do. Now, it's just amazing to watch the Lord's hand in all of this. See, the Lord is behind it. And here is Darius, a Persian king. Can you imagine a Persian king doing something like this? But here are the records that he did it. Paying for the house of the Lord to be built. Paying for sacrifices to be offered to God. Why? Because he doesn't want the displeasure of that God against him. It'd be nice if other rulers would have an attitude like that toward the Lord. See, that's what the Lord desires. But here was a ruler who respected the God of heaven and earth and wanted his favor. And of course, he is going to get his favor. Now, this brings us to the next thing, and that is the completion of the temple. Now, remember, the Lord had encouraged his people. He said, now, look, you've got a lot of opposition. You've got a lot of trouble with building this temple. But you just remember, this temple is going to be built. Remember what Zechariah said? He quoted the words of the Lord, and he said, my house will be built. And when it's built, you Jews will know that the Lord has sent me unto you. Later on, Zechariah said, the hand of Zerubbabel has laid the foundation. The hand of Zerubbabel will finish it. Over and over again, the Lord assured his people that the temple would be built. And so now we're going to come down to the completion of the temple. The temple was completed on the third day of the month Adar. Now that would be part of February and part of March. Third day of the month Adar in the sixth year of Darius the first, king of Persia. That is, it would be completed in the spring of 515 B.C. Now just think with me, for a few moments. When was the foundation of the temple laid? Remember that? Remember the date of the foundation of the temple? We looked at that way back when we were looking at this. The foundation of the date of the temple. There it is in the month Iyar. Page 5, the month Iyar, part of April and May, in the year 535 B.C. Now that's when the foundation of the temple was made. In the month Iyar, in April and May of the year 535 B.C. How long did it take then for this building program to be completed? Just do a little arithmetic. And I think 535 515. Almost 20 years. Almost 20 years. See? Now, it was the foundation was completed in 515 B.C., which would be part of April and May. Now, when you would come up to April and May of 515, that would be 20 years. Just a little short of 20 years it took them to build that temple after the foundation had been laid. But notice that the temple was completed according to the commandment of God. Remember in Haggai, the Lord told Haggai, says, you go up to the mountain, you get the wood, you build the temple, that I might take pleasure in it and be honored by it. God commanded the people to do it through Hagar. And it was according to that commandment that the temple was completed. Also according to the commandment of Cyrus. Cyrus, we saw in chapter 1, issued the command that the house of the Lord should be built. He said, the Lord has given me all these nations, all these kingdoms. And now, I want to build his house for him. And he decreed that it should be done. And he put that decree in writing. We saw that in chapter 6, the terms of that decree about the rebuilding of the house of the Lord. And it was also done according to what Darius the First said. Darius the First in chapter 6 and verse 7. He said, let the work of this house of God alone, let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews build this house of God in its place. He said, I want the house of God built. So here is God, he says, I want it built. Here is Cyrus, he said, I want the house built, and I'm going to pay for it. Here's Darius the First. He says, I want the house built. You Jews, let the people build the house on the very site where the other temple was. And then an interesting note. Also, Artaxerxes Longimanus, who was the king of Persia from 465 to 425 B.C., he had a little hand in this. Now, remember, the temple was completed 515 B.C. Now, these dates are after 515 B.C. These dates are 465 to 425 B.C. But these dates concern Ezra himself. Now, when Artaxerxes, and we're told this in chapter 7, we'll look at this in a moment. But when Artaxerxes was the king of Persia, Ezra went to him, and he made a request, and we have this in chapter 7. And the request evidently was that he be allowed to take the people of Israel back to Judah and Jerusalem with him. And so what Artaxerxes did was to give him permission to do it. And he wrote him a letter that Ezra took with him, in which he authorized him to take anybody back to Jerusalem and Judah who wanted to go, any Jews. So if any Jew wanted to go, that Jew was free to go. And that was in the letter that Artaxerxes gave to Ezra to take with him. And you want to know what else he did? In addition to that, he said the sacrifices for the Jews, I want to supply them for them so that they will have all the sacrifices they need, whether it's animal sacrifice or anything else. And in addition to that, he said, now, if any work needs to be done on the house of the Lord, if there's any expense whatsoever, he said, I want to put the bill for it. And I'm going to pay for it out of the revenue that is received by the governor on the western side of the Euphrates River. So what he did was say, Ezra, look, here's a blank check. Whatever you need, up to certain limits. Now, I shouldn't say a blank check completely, because there were limits, but the limits were just unbelievable. You can read about them in chapter 7. He said, here's a blank check up to these limits. Now, anything you need for the temple, to beautify it in any way, you go ahead and you get it, and I will put the bill for it. I will pay for it out of the revenue that's received there. Furthermore, he said, the priests, the Levites, the workers of the temple, none of them are to be taxed. They are tax exempt. So there you have religious workers being tax exempt at an early, early date. There's your first tax exemption. But you have that right there, and he spells it out. He says, all the leaders are to be tax exempt. No toll, no custom. Nothing is to be taken from them. But just look at this. in chapter 7, and first in verse 20. You can read the rest of this yourself. He sends Ezra back, and he gives him a lot of gold and silver to be used for whatever is needed there in Jerusalem. You can see that in verses 15 and 16, and they're carrying the silver and gold as the king and his counselors have freely offered the God of Israel's habitation is in Jerusalem, and all the silver and gold and so on. Thou mayest buy speedily with this money bullocks and rams and lamb with their meat offerings and their drink offerings, offer them upon the altar of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. He said, now here's money. You go back, Ezra, and you take this money. And you just buy everything you need for the offerings to your God. See, I'm putting the bill for all this. And any money left over, you just use it however you think God would have it used. He had a lot of trust in him. And then he says, verse 18, whatsoever shall seem good to thee and to thy brethren do with the rest of the silver and gold that do after the will of God. Then, verse 19, the vessels also that are given thee for the service of the house of thy God, those deliver thou before the God of Jerusalem. And, now here it is, whatsoever more shall be needful for the house of thy God, which thou shalt have occasion to bestow. Now, maybe there will be something needful, and you don't know about it right now. You'll have to bestow it on the house of God. Whatsoever more shall be needful for the house of thy God, which thou shalt have occasion to bestow, bestow it out of the king's treasure house. Isn't that something? Here's another heathen king, king of Persia, and he's saying, any work needs to be done on the house of the Lord, I'm paying for it. And it'll come out of the revenue that's received by the one who is governing on the western side of the Euphrates River. Now drop down to verse 27. Look at what Ezra says. Blessed be the Lord God of our fathers, which hath put such a thing as this in the king's heart, to beautify the house of the Lord. Anything needed for the house of the Lord, the king says, I'll pay for it. And that's the reason I put that in. So as you can see, even after the temple was completed, anything else that needed to be done on it, the king said, I'll pay for it. And so here, if the temple of the Lord is completed, according to the commandment of God, according to the commandment of Cyrus, God controlled Cyrus so that he would issue that commandment. According to the commandment of Darius, he controlled Darius, but he would issue that commandment. The heart of the king, eternity, whatsoever he will. And Artaxerxes, long among us, the same thing there. He turned the heart of long among us to do this as well for the house of the Lord. Then I put this down. The completion of the temple was due largely to the encouragement and support of the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, who, through their prophesying, brought about the resumption of the work of the temple and assured the people that the temple would be built. Now here the temple is finally completed. Almost 20 years after the foundation had been laid, now the temple is completed. And this is what the Lord wanted to do. The book of Haggai is going to talk about them building that temple, that house that the Lord wanted built. And it was through Haggai that the work on the foundation was resumed. And it was through Haggai that they were encouraged to continue that work until its completion. Likewise, through the prophecies of Zechariah, the son of Iddo. Now, the temple is complete. And when it's complete, you have the dedication of the temple. The Lord has helped them to do it. Now they dedicate the temple to the Lord. And notice that the temple was dedicated to the Lord with joy. You can imagine the joy that filled their heart. Just think of all the opposition they had in doing this work. From the Samaritans, the difficulties they went through. But now it's completed and their hearts are filled with joy. We see that in verse 16. chapter 6. You know the joy that's there? I had the joy of helping to build a church. And we started it from scratch and wanted education. That's the way to get it. We met in a person's basement. And the Lord kept blessing. I was just totally ignorant of zoning law. This is a case where ignorance was bliss. Zoning laws, they were far, far from my mind. And I was just anxious to get the work of the Lord done. And we were meeting this person's basement. Well, work kept growing. And this was back in 1960. And it just got so, like on Sundays, people couldn't even park in front of their house. I mean, how'd you like to own a house and not be able to park in front of them? So they complained, can't blame them. And we should have known better, but we didn't. And so they contacted us, but you know what happened in the meantime? We got a piece of property, and we started to build. At the very time when that zoning board said, "Look, you can't be here anymore in this basement," we had the base of the church done to the point where we could move right into that basement and didn't miss a single service. That's the way the Lord worked. And I remember how the people worked. One of the men on our board was on the board of Water Light. He had his own construction business. They used that business to build the church. We had electricians. They used their skills to do all the electrical work. We had painters. They used their skills. Plumbers. They used their skills. And when that church was finished, we started in the fall of 1960. The basement done in December of 1960. And on February 19, 1961, the upstairs was complete. They were moving. And I remember I preached in the morning service upstairs, and we had Jack Worsley for the evening service. A lot of mud outside. The place was packed in the evening. People got stuck in the mud and everything else. But we had a great time in the Lord anyway. But you talk about joy. They had worked hard, and joy just flooded their soul. And that's the way it was here. The temple completed. We didn't have a building program. It lasted almost 20 years. But this one did. And now it's finished, and the people are filled with joy. And notice what they do. They offer sacrifices to the Lord. They offer burnt offerings to the Lord. 100 oxen, 200 rams, 400 lambs. And the burnt offering signified what? Tell me. What did the burnt offering signify? What's the purpose of the burnt offering? What did it represent? What was it? No, not the sin offering. Now that comes later. See, the burnt offering signified the dedication of one's person to the Lord. And they offered up all these burnt offerings. What were they doing? They were saying, "Lord, we're dedicating ourselves to you." And that was symbolized by the burnt offerings that were offered unto the Lord. And in the sin offering, 12 he-goats, one for each tribe, to take care of any sin of which they were guilty. So that on the basis of what was represented by those sin offerings, the sin of the people would be removed. What a combination. Making sure that your sin is all taken care of. You're right with the Lord. Dedicating yourself to the Lord. Dedicating the house of the Lord to Him. The people are ready to serve Him. And then notice what they do. The priests and the Levites were also appointed according to their divisions and classes to the service of the temple. So that from that time onward, they could fulfill their office, each division and class in its week. Now, when the priests and Levites were appointed, they were appointed according to the instructions that Moses had given in the Pentateuch. The priests were divided into divisions, the Levites into classes, and they would have a division of priests and a class of Levites serving each week. So the Levites and priests were appointed to do the work in the house of the Lord. They were appointed according to the vision that the Lord had set for them in His Word. And each week, the priests who were to serve, the Levites who were to serve, this note down here. The people to whom the Lord directed Haggai to deliver his message, listen to this, were the right people, Jews who were devoted to God, who were living in the right place. That would be Jerusalem, where God wanted his people to worship him until the death, burial, and resurrection of his son Jesus, who wanted to do the right thing. See, the right people in the right place, who wanted to do the right thing to rebuild the temple for the right reason, to please God. And that statement comes from a well-known biblical expositor by the name of James Boyce. And but there it is. The right people in the right place doing the right work. Now, this is the background material of Haggai. Are there any questions on the background material? Now, I want you to see this because you can see as you go through this how Haggai is just going to rise right up out of that background material. And you can just fit Haggai right in there. Tremendous lessons in that background material for us to learn. And we want to learn it. Now, any questions? Tatnai, he was the governor of Syria and Cilicia, so it would be the Syrians there on the western side of the Euphrates River. He was the governor of that region, that whole region, and that, of course, included Palestine at that particular time. But he was the governor territory, and I should say probably from Syria. He was a governor of that. I can't prove that. All right, any other questions? Yes, Mr. Sona.
The decree that Cyrus made and the decree they found later, King Cyrus.
Yeah.
The content is different. Why?
How is it different?
One includes, the things that doesn't include the other.
Well, I see. Okay. Well, you see, like when if you look at there's really no difference in it. It's just that in the first part of Israel. Now, if you look at this. Thus saith Cyrus, the king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven hath given me all the kings of the earth. And he had charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, and so on. Who is there among you of all his people? His God be with him. Let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the God of Israel. He is God, which is in Jerusalem. And then he tells how the people are to help him. But, you see, it's just a matter where, when he proclaims the decree, it wasn't necessary for him to proclaim every part of the written decree here. But he just saying this is what he wants done. And you have like the dimensions and things like that in the written decree. Now, whether or not that written decree was passed around, we are not told here. It just says that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and put it also in writing. Now, there was a proclamation made that this should be done. Now, it was in writing. Now, does that mean that the proclamation consisted of everything that was in writing? It may be that everything was in writing was in that proclamation. But what Ezra is doing is just taking the essential part of it. And if we had something that was essential, and here were some of the details, we would just say, now here is the essential thing that is to be done. But we won't mention all the details. There's nothing in the written decree that would contradict what you have here in chapter 1. Now, since it's also in writing, it may be that that decree was sent everywhere. We're not told that, but it may be that it was. But what Ezra would be doing would be saying, here's the essential thing in this decree, that the Jews be allowed to rebuild the temple. And the Lord has put it in his heart to do it, and so he's going to do it. But it wouldn't contradict anything in the written decree. It would just be in the written decree that there would be an elaboration. And see, when we do that a lot, we'll take something like a bill that's going to pay us Congress, and now, like that bill I mentioned to you, where they want to give civil rights to gays. So I'll mention that, but I won't mention all the details of the bill. See? And there's no conflict with what I say, because that's the essential thrust of the bill. And here, like the decree, the central thrust is that they be allowed to go back and rebuild the temple. And the written decree has all the details. And now it just says that that was proclaimed throughout all his kingdom and put also in writing. And it may be that the written decree was passed all around. So it may be that that's what it was.
I thought it was kind of a statement that is showed to the public so that people can see, everybody can see.
Well, it very well may be. Very well may be, because it said it was also in writing, and it was proclaimed throughout the kingdom, and it may be that here was this statement in writing, and they had people go and read it to all the people in different places. That very well may be how it happened. But see, what Ezra's doing is just giving the main thrust of that decree. But that's a good point. I would think that what I just said is a very good possibility. That here was this decree, and it's taken to all the people, read to them. I could see that very, very easily. But what Ezra would be doing would just be giving the heart of that decree, that the temple was to be. Good point. All right, Ed.
In that case, could it be that the first instance in chapter 1, where it says this is what he says, was the part that was issued for public consumption, but that there was more to it than that, such as the dimensions and so on and so forth, that were considered technical and weren't important to be read to everybody? Like sometimes we have that documents that consist of a whole lot of stuff, but when it's disseminated to the people, it's just the major thrust of it, like you said.
Yeah. Well, that would be possible too.
But see, Darius dug it up.
Uh-huh.
He read the entire thing and included in it the extra details, like the dimensions.
See, all we know that now, see again, that could be possible. See, we're just not told how it was done. All we're told is the decree was in writing. We have the written form of it in chapter 6, no question about that. And when Cyrus issued it, that written form in chapter 6 was in existence. But did he take a shorter form? But just the essentials and publish that? Or did he take the whole decree and publish that? Just not told. Either one would be possible. We're just not told. It's like in Haggai's message, like the essentials are given. He probably elaborated on some of those things. And it could be that the essentials of the decree were given, just like you mentioned. See? And passed that. It could be that way. Or it could be that the decree that you have in chapter 6 was read. I don't know. But the text just does not say. All it says is that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put
proclamation and the writing were the same, identical? Or was the proclamation the essentials of the decree? So in writing, he wrote down the details and put the essentials in the proclamation that was being given. I can answer that in three words. Because it just doesn't say. And so, you know, that's about all you can do. You know that the, you know what is said here in chapter 1 was proclaimed throughout the kingdom. That the Jews are to go back, and now the part about the neighbors giving them things, that was in the written decree. See? Remember the goods that were to be given, they were to be given transportation for their belongings, money to go back for their journey, and things like that. Those things weren't in the written decree that was in the archives, say. But this is what Cyrus said that people should do. Now, maybe that would indicate that he put the essentials with that in the proclamation, and the other decree with the essential things in the archives, but we just don't.
Another question. When Tekna investigated everything, the Bible does not mention about the Judas verdict.
That's right.
We, he stopped it, but after the temple.
Yes.
So why Tekna find that?
Well, we're told in the scripture that if Pseudo-Smyrnus is the Artaxerxes, if he is that king, the scripture says that he commanded the Samaritans to cause the Jews to stop the work on the temple until he should issue another order. And with that authorization, they went ahead and they did it by force. So that part is in the scripture. It's just that the Artaxerxes that is named there in that particular place, the question is he the Pseudo-Smyrnus? Logically, it would seem that he would have to be that particular one. Then that raises that other question about the length of time that the book speaks, which we will look into as we go through the book. Don?
Well, they use Artaxerxes' name later, and then that's talking about a different Artaxerxes.
Yes, yes. That's the Artaxerxes that was in power in Ezra's time. Now, Ezra is writing about things that happened before his time. But it was in the seventh year of Artaxerxes, 458 B.C., that Ezra took with him all the Jews that wanted to go back, and they went back. But see, a lot of the Jews had already gone back. You had almost 50,000 going back in Cyrus' time, 536. But now, in that seventh year, a lot of other Jews went back, whoever wanted to. That's when Artaxerxes gave them free reign, and he left on, what was it, the first day of the first month and the first day of the fifth month. He got there. It was a long trip that is specified in chapter 7. But yes, I would say that that is Artaxerxes Longimanus, who would be after, wouldn't be the same Artaxerxes as before. This Artaxerxes in chapter 7 comes after Darius. The other happened before Darius, contextually. You have to keep that in mind. And Ezra, of course, is usually pinpointed. He was a teacher of the law, and he's put generally in the 5th century B.C. These other events would be in the 6th century B.C.
I was just curious why. It almost seems like it'd be a lot easier to just say this is Artaxerxes first.
Yeah, but the Holy Spirit didn't do that, and why he didn't, we don't know. But he has infinite wisdom. I don't. But he just has Artaxerxes there. But you can go through. And now see, the interesting thing is, Don, when the like when Ezra wrote the book, you know, the people know right away which one it was. Now, when you're removed from history, sometimes you don't have as much information about those things. And so we depend on archaeology and things like that to understand them better. But you can see the sequence of events. And that sequence of events, you see, you've got Cyrus, you know when he reigned. And then you've got that accusation made when, let's see, the Ahasuerus was king. Now, that would probably, see, I have to use the word probably here, probably be Cambyses, because he was the next Persian king, 29 to 22. And then, right after that, Pseudo-Smyrnus was in there in 522, and then along comes Darius the First, 521 to 486 BC. Then you go right on down, and Xerxes is next, and then Artaxerxes, then down to Darius the Second. All right, Ed.
Get back to my question was, when Tat and I wrote the letter to Darius and recommended he look back into the history to check out to see what happened, did he not discover that the order had been made for them to stop? Or did he, in addition, he found that Cyrus had said that they...
No, they were looking. See, Cyrus didn't give the order to stop.
So they weren't even looking?
No. See, the decree was to look for... The decree was to look for the decree of Cyrus. See, when Tat and I went to the Jews, he said, "Now, who authorized you to do this?" And they said, "Cyrus." Now, nothing was mentioned about Pseudo-Smyrnus commanding them to stop, but they just said, "Cyrus." As far as I know, they never, at least the text is silent about them giving them a name. It doesn't say anything about giving the name to the leaders. As far as we know, there's no record of it. They probably did not do it, but I don't know. Maybe he listed it wrong somehow. But there's no record of that. I mean, if they're going to let them go on with the work, I doubt it, since it doesn't say they gave them the name that they did. But that is conjecture. On the other, the decree was just to look for the decree of Cyrus, not the other. That's the only thing they were concerned about. Did Cyrus authorize this? Now, Pat and I wrote this letter and said they're building again. Now, he didn't say anything about that command of Pseudo-Smyrnus to stop building. He just said they're building again. Why? Now, maybe Tat and I had some recollection that Pseudo-Smyrnus had said, you know, you're to stop. Now, here they are going again, going against that. Now, what do you want me to do? That could be implied that Tat and I knew about that. And he says, what do you want me to do? Now, do you say that Cyrus gave them permission to do this? And I would recommend that you see whether or not Cyrus did give permission, and then let me know what you want to do. Do you want me to stop them, or do you want me to let them go on? But now, Pat and I had to have a reason for asking that. Maybe he knew that Pseudo-Smyrnus had commanded them to stop, and now they have started again, and now Darius, what do you want me to do? So you've got different kings now. What do you want me to do? You want me to stop them? You want me to let them go ahead? And they say that Cyrus said that they could do it. I would suggest you look for that decree and see if he did. Then let me know what you want to do. So that's what he does. And lets them know possibility is he could have known. He could have known. And to let them know, knowing that, say, but whether or not he did know, I don't know. Are any other questions on that? This material is interesting. I wish I could give you pinpoint answers on everything, but you can't go beyond the evidence. And the evidence is there, but it's fascinating. A tremendous lesson in watching the Lord intervene in history. And he wanted that temple built. And he said, it's going to be built. And if he has to intervene in history and turn the hearts of kings to do it, he'll do it. I think we can learn a lesson from that. See, but when the Lord says he wants his gospel preached everywhere, he's going to do it. And you can have communism over there. They can say you're not going to preach the gospel here and kick it out of the schools. And all of a sudden, the Lord turns it around. Now you have more freedom in the communist countries than you have here. You believe that? Say, now over there, say, you go into school, they want Christianity as the basis of their ethical and moral behavior. Say, that wouldn't be nice if this was. But see, that's the way the Lord works. He always works that. All right, any other questions on this? All right, now, this brings us down, and let me just say a word about this, to the exposition of Haggai, and I'll just set this up for you, and then we'll look into this tomorrow. The first message is right there in chapter 1. I want to look at the time of that message. Now remember, in Haggai, you're going to have four messages that are going to be delivered by Haggai, the preacher, the prophet. And the time of the first one is given for us. Now the year, it was the second year of Darius the king. Now you look at that in Haggai chapter 1 and verse 1. In the second year of Darius the king. Now, that's all it says. It doesn't say Darius the first. Doesn't say Darius the second. Doesn't say Darius the Stasvis. Doesn't say Darius Notus. Now, the question is, which Darius is intended? Is this Darius the first, 521 through 486 BC? Or is this Darius the second, otherwise known as Notus? Darius the first was known as Hystaspes. Darius the second, known as Notus, he reigned from 424 to 395 BC. Now, how do you know which one it is? Because it doesn't say. What's that? Well, what about Ezra? Well, you have to look at it in the context of Ezra. I would guess you have to do that. But just try to think now, are there specific arguments that you can use to rule out the one and nail down the other? Now, Lincoln says, Ezra, just chop that up a little bit.
Well, I think
he
gives the dates when the temple was completed.
Yes, he gives the dates when the temple was completed, and since it was completed 515, it would be pretty hard to beat out 424 to 395. Second year of Darius second would be, that's the point, would be 423. And the temple was definitely completed by that time. All right, but you think about this. I've got to let you go now. And there are a couple of other things here I want you to see as we just nail this down and go ahead with this material. And we're going to have an exciting time to see dates Tuesday, Thursday, when we get to Zerubbabel.